I want to say I just congratulate the government of Syria. I congratulate the Syrian people. I congratulate Syrian Canadians, and I apologize that they were not permitted a chance to vote in the election in Syria, which has been exactly what Obama thinks it is and exactly what the king of Qatar thinks it is, the emperor of Saudi Arabia and the charlatan of some other monarchy. You're right, guys. It is a body blow to you because the Syrian people are rallying against terror, which is brought to them. And I notice since Obama cares about terror, he might want to look into it. U.S. funds, the funds of Saudi Arabia's, funds of Kuwait, are all being, and Qatar, pardon me, Qatar is a major player, and a Turkey is involved, all of them trying, through terror and through not patriots and not rebels and not pro-democracy people, but mercenaries, actually, who are funded to and this place, this is one issue where we ought to address what terror is. It is a political stratagem, and it's being carried out by people sponsored by Britain, the United States, and France. And the trick is with it, or what makes it work, is it defies morality, it defies ethics, it defies civilization. It says, you see that mosque, I'm going to blow it up. See that school with the children, I will burn it. This is because the object is to create terror. Syrians have rallied against what were practically impossible odds and have reached a point where they are seem to be gaining ground against their attackers. And I think Canadians should be pleased at that. Because we don't support terror, no one should support terror, have anything to do with it. So, and we should ask our governments to be objective and to look at the facts. And that would also mean that the embassies should not have been closed. They should be opened so that you can have commerce and movement of people. And if there are people here who want to participate in the votes in their homeland and it's legally accepted, as it was in the case of Ukraine, well, then why can't they do it? Why can't Syrian Canadians be allowed? And it really, I looked it up, by the way. I want you to know I do my research, and there's nothing in the Syrian constitution that says they have to obey President Obama of the United States. There's absolutely nothing there about if Obama says the president of Syria must step down, there's nothing in the Syrian constitution that says he has to obey. I understand that there are countries, Belgium, Canada, Britain, where that might be true. I haven't checked, but my intuition tells me it might be true. But it's not true of Syria.
Well, actually, didn't a prime minister of Canada once have to step down because John Kennedy didn't like him?
Well, he certainly indicated he thought he ought to go. Yeah.
And he went.
Yeah. As soon as they harumph, it's pretty much over. I want to make sure again I tell you that Thursday night, the 5th of June, at 6:30, Betsatoon, there will be a talk by Juan Carranza at International Day of Solidarity with Cuban Five, 6:30, June the 5th, Betsatoon. And on Saturday, June the 7th, at 1 p.m. at 299 Queen Street West, there will be a rally in support of the Cuban Five, and of course also saying support those who fight terror, as the Cuban Five did. The site to go to is torontoforumoncuba.com. And Keith Bolander, who has written two very, very important books about this subject, one titled Cuba Under Siege, that's the most recent, published in 2012, and Voices from the Other Side, his interviews with Cubans who had experienced the terror carried out by Miami-based operators with the connivance of the U.S. government. Keith Bolander will be our guest. He'll be coming into the studio next Monday. He'll be telling us about these meetings taking place in the U.S. There's two or three actually going on in the next few days, and there will be this rally at the White House. Now, Maya Angelou, where there's going to be a memorial meeting and a discussion of her poetry and of the impact of her on American culture, and it'll take place, and I should say also Canadian and world culture. So she's going to be remembered on Friday at 6:30 at a different book list. And there will be readings of poetry, and I assume there might even be a reproduction of some of Maya Angelou herself. She was a really remarkable woman, and she wrote her either through fiction or her essays. It was very telling, and had a lot of influence on people. And I at any rate, we urge you to three big events: Thursday at Betts Attune, and Friday at a different book list, and Saturday to the rally. There's another matter I want to make sure I mention that struck me, and listeners to the Taylor Report be aware of this issue. Of course, we talk about Rwanda frequently, and there's been a strange episode taking place in court in St. Catharines, where an individual, Jean Habinshuti, has Berkman, has been ordered to out of the country, and to, as a matter of fact, they're trying to return him to Rwanda. And I have to tell you, as I follow a lot of these matters, this is one, to me, the strangest one. I mean, I'm trying to figure out where this, how this could occur. Mr. Habinshuti entered Canada in 2010 or 11. And if he wanted to join his family, his wife is a citizen, lives here, and he has children here. He had been living in Kenya. But who he is quite amazing. He was the personal secretary of the prime minister of Rwanda, of the interim government. Her name was Agathe Uwilingiyimana, pardon me. Once I get into it, I can pronounce it. Uwilingiyimana. And she was an opponent of the, in 1994, during the, at the time of the famous events, she was the principal public voice in opposition to the government led by President Habyarimana. And she was a member of the party called the MDR. And I want, you have to listen closely to understand this. She, that party had split, and she was one of the most vocal critics and of President Habyarimana. And her wing of the party had signed an agreement, mutual respect, etc., with the RPF, which is today in power. And so they were, in some sense, formally allied. And indeed, they had all signed an agreement called the Arusha Accords, which was supposed to lead to a peaceful resolution of matters in Rwanda. And we all know that what was that, because we've heard the name General Dallaire, who's been in the press lately. He was there to escort the peace process. Well, one of the people he met, and is always a part of his story, is Agathe Uwilingiyimana, who is herself frightened and worried about the growing violence in the country as they're trying to bring about a new government. And she is the interim prime minister. She is sitting in place of the prime minister-to-be, Faustin Twegiri Mungu. You have, if you listen to Taylor Report, you've heard Faustin Twegiri Mungu talk on this show. Both of them were in opposition to the government of, I shouldn't say the government, to the president, Habyarimana. So, well, on April the 6th, as we all know, the plane carrying the president of Rwanda, Habyarimana, was shot down. And we won't go into who did that, but it was shot down. And we know that shortly after, a war broke out between the army, the government army of Rwanda, and the Rwanda Patriotic Front. And on the same night that Habyarimana was assassinated, Uwilingiyimana, probably actually in the following morning, was murdered, or you can use the word assassinated or killed, but she was and she was the sitting prime minister. And that has always been stood out as one of the crimes that took place in the during this episode, which is generally labeled the genocide or the massacres of so many thousands of people. Her secretary was this man, Jean Abinchoudi. When the fighting ended in July 1994, he was in the country or returned to the country. He had been in hiding, of course. And so he returned, and he then functioned in the new government, and he took one position or another, and he was also made a member of the Rwandan Senate. He was never accused of any crime. Nobody said he ever did anything. He just was there. He had been the secretary to Agathe Uwilingiyimana. So, I guess life became uncomfortable for him in Rwanda. I think he was a friend of Pasteur Bizimungu, who became the first president of Rwanda under Paul Kagame. When I say under Paul Kagame, Kagame's been in power all the way, but he had a president. His name was Bizimungu. At any rate, this man, Abinchoudi, no longer felt safe. So he went to Kenya, and then he came here. But I read that among the reasons that they're going to remove him, and by the way, I'm not sure he may have already been on a plane. I'm sorry to hear about this, but I'm afraid he might already be on the plane back to Rwanda. But the reason they gave was that they said that he had been in government between 1990 and 1994. They said the Canadian position is if you were in the government, you can't come to Canada. I don't understand the reasoning, because the Canadian government, the American government, the French government, the British government, they all were in favor, Belgians, were in favor of the Arusha peace agreement. And Agathe Uwilingiyimana was one of their best friends, one of the people they supported. General Dallaire went out of his way to help Agathe Uwilingiyimana. He read his book, watched the movies. And so her secretary... she's murdered. Her secretary comes here, and then he's told, no, you were in the government. Well, she was in the government, yes, by the way. But he's a secretary, but this doesn't make any sense at all. Why would he be... And then they say that, and I hate to add a further macabre note, but they say that there was a meeting on April the 2nd. This is 4 days before the president was assassinated, called by Agathe Uwilingiyimana, in which they discussed the removal, that would be the illegal and probably violent removal of President Habyarimana. And it was that meeting, according to the government argument in the case of Abinchoudi in St. Catharines, Ontario, it was that meeting which they said triggered the terrible genocide. Well, that's a new interpretation. That would be historically curious. I would call that very curious explanation because, first of all, it used to, for those of us who followed it, there was a time when that was denied that the meeting had happened. Then apparently enough voices came forward and said, of course, well, it did happen. But what actually went on there has never been clear. And certainly most people who were witnesses who knew anything about the meeting said that it was one of those talks, but nothing came of the talks. But then they say, further to follow their reasoning, which is awfully hard to do, that the rumors about the meeting, you see, inflamed the people. The rumors that Agathe had been talking to people about overthrowing Habyarimana, that inflamed people, so that later, when Habyarimana was murdered, then that makes her responsible. But then they move it beyond her to him. They say he's responsible because he convened the meeting. So she had a secretary, and she said, I want a meeting with so-and-so and so-and-so, and so call him up and bring him. Well, what do? You do that, right? You're not organizing anything other than what you're told to do. And nobody's ever shown that there was anything sinister. But here we find, I keep trying to get this clear, and frankly, I can't help you beyond saying that has to be one of the most bizarre cases I've heard about. Because here's a guy who is guilty of nothing. Nobody ever accused him of anything. And he just wants to be with his family. And he's uncomfortable in Rwanda, which wouldn't be news. There's a whole bunch of people uncomfortable. And they say, no, you were at a meeting. which precipitated the genocide, which is strange. And then, of course, that you can't, since you were in government, which he was not, he was a secretary, but between 1990 and 1994, but the government they were talking about is the one that the world asked them to form. That's called the Arusha Agreement. So you're supposed to get a prize, a medal, a pat on the back, not be deported.
But in any event, Phil, sorry for interrupting you, he's a civil servant. He just does what he's told to do, right? That's what you're a secretary to the prime minister. You're not making policy. You're taking letters.
No, you'd have to show that he attended political meetings and that he had. On top of that, they say that his party is an extremist party. Well, no, the party had a split. And the people you call extremists, and I don't agree with any of these labels, but the ones they called extremists did not go along with attacking Habyarimana. He was with those who were officially called moderates. If you're writing books about this, you can't get past the publisher without using the word moderate. So he's not only a moderate, he's a heavyweight moderate. He's a serious moderate champion. And so here he is. And as I last I heard, he was going to be hoisted under this rubric. So I'm telling you, you're listening to Taylor Report. This is where we tell exotic stories. My heart goes out to Abin Shuti and his family and his wonderful lawyer, her name is Lisa Winter Card. She did her best. I hope maybe this has been some terrible mistake. Anyhow, you're listening to Taylor Report at CIUT 89.5 FM, and I got one last esoteric point I want to share with you. I was reading about, of all people, Eleanor Marx, and she came to Canada, and she came to the United States to give speeches about socialism because people over here wanted to hear about it. By the way, full house every night. Wherever she went, a full house. This is about 1888, I believe. But she wrote about it. And she said, are these people organizable? Can we win them to socialism? And then she said, it's really tough going over here. They all have socialist hearts, but they don't understand what it is and its content. If you talk to them, they say, oh, yeah, I agree with you. But I don't like socialism, but I agree with you about everything you said. But her final point was that she found one group that she in Kansas City, and she really liked them, and she said they're the most organizable, revolutionary, and socialist people she met. And they were the Cowboys. She said, boy, these guys are something. And she said, they talk my language. And I wish she could come back and see how this whole thing has ended up with Clint Eastwood and Ronald Reagan. Because the people she met were really, she said, they don't have anything. And they know they need an organization. And so she said they were the easiest people to talk to, the Cowboys. Anyway, you've been listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FN, and write to us, Taylor@CIUT.FM. We'll see you next week.